This podcast is brought to you by Amusement Warehouse Magazine, the industry's largest trade publication. We cover amusement parks, carnivals, fairs, festivals, history, safety columns. We really got it all when it comes to the amusement business. Only remaining print publication in the amusement industry on a regular basis. So if you're interested in what the amusement industry has to offer, subscribe today. You can subscribe by logging on to amusementwarehouse.com, carnivalwarehouse.com, or amusementparkwarehouse.com. Welcome to another edition of the Amusement Warehouse Podcast. Today, deep from the heartland, we have the fair manager, or the executive director, I should say, of the Nebraska State Fair, Jamie Parr. Jamie, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, Ron. So glad to be here. It's great to see you.
Glad to have you. Great to see you. You just finished your first, technically your first year as executive director, fair manager. You weren't acting. You were just acting the year before.
A couple of fairs as director now, so it's less new these days, but yeah, it's going great. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the second part of your question.
I said you're not acting anymore.
I'm not acting. No, yeah, I got to take full responsibility now. That's the truth. Yes, sir.
I love that title, acting fair manager. Like, you're still running it, but why are they acting? There's so many people that they say acting for a couple of years before they do it. So, but you're not new to the fair. You've been there, what, 26 years, I read, or 27 years, something around that line?
Yeah, it never really felt all that new to me. To be honest, I've been around here a while, and I've done a few different jobs, so felt very well prepared, and things have gone great. So, yeah, I'm not playing the I'm new to the position card. I that's always kind of annoying to me, to be honest. I really have a stance that I would never say that. So yeah, I won't play that card. I'm taking full ownership and responsibility of this show.
It's funny. Yeah, I don't know. I get on these tangents, but I always think about this with a lot of fairs or volunteer, you know, they have volunteers. And a lot of times you hear, well, we can't do that because I'm a volunteer. Well, I can't do that because I'm a volunteer. And, you know, I was asked once to do a talk at a IAFE thing. And they said, what topic do you want to do? I want to do, if you can't serve soup, don't work in the soup kitchen. You know, because just you're a volunteer, you still got to serve soup. You know, it's like don't take the job if you're not going to do it. And that's a great attitude you have with, don't make an excuse. Just, you know, okay, it's your first year. You're going to make mistakes. People expect that, even though you didn't, you did great. But, you know, it's you hear that a lot, and you just wonder, like, what? No, just go do it and see what happens.
Yeah, no, we're all human. We're definitely going to make the wrong choices or wrong decisions sometimes, but you got to own it. If you don't own it, who's gonna? And I believe we've got to own it when we box something up, and can't blame it on something silly.
It's a fantastic attitude. So, what was your first job at the fair? What did you start out as?
Oh, I loved it. It was so awesome. I worked the front counter. I was hired seasonally to help accept money and sign people up to show their fine arts or their photography, their foods exhibits. Here at Nebraska, we call those competitive exhibits. It's easy to refer to them as hobbies or special interests, but I signed people up to do competitive exhibits. And it was my first taste, and still a very special component of the fair for me. So yeah, at the front counter, accepting all the highs and the lows that come into the front counter, the I got a questions, the I got a complaints, the oh my gosh, I wish you would. It was a good introduction to the beast of the Nebraska State Fair.
And that was still when you were back in the old fairgrounds in Lincoln, right?
Yeah, that was a neat facility. Oh my goodness. Yeah, lots of traditions that were alive and well there. We carried a lot of them over to Grand Island with us, but just the very authentic look and feel of everything in Lincoln, that's pretty hard to replicate.
And where did you go from you got promoted to something else after that? What was your journey towards clawing your way to the top now that you're up there?
Absolutely. It's been an amazing journey, something that I cherish very much. From that front counter, I moved around to the side of that same front counter.
The side of the
counter. I
Samuel, we're running you up. You're going over to the left now. Way to go.
Yeah. And it was to the left, Ron. You're exactly right. It was, yes. But there, so then I got to be at the front counter year round, not just during the state fair. But at the front counter on the left, got to do accounts payable. So I learned a little bit about paying the bills and, you know, receiving people coming to the door, and also helped with the entry books then for those, competitive exhibits departments. That was pretty special. I was the first person on the phone, first face that people would see when they came into the office. So the receptionist and the accounts payable was the next step in the adventure.
The face of the fair.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, of anybody in person. Yeah, for sure. Then I moved over, continuing my journey to the left. The office next to me to the left was the
office now. Wow.
Was the sales department. So I was actually, I think at that time, I've had so many different titles in that one job, because that third position that I occupied was a journey that lasted the longest for me, and it's very special and dear to my heart. But at first it was called the space rental manager. I learned from Sharon Schrock all about booking booths and concessionaires. And then at that time in Lincoln, we also did like trade shows and craft shows and quinceañeras and antique shows. So we had the grounds year round, and we booked all those off season things. So I was the person keeping track of the schedule.
That's really important. And, you know, especially with your having done the accounting, you can see how important that off season revenue is to the fair, to the bottom line. If you're taking a lot of money outside the fair, that's a great thing for most fairs anyway.
Yeah, necessary. Absolutely. So we had to get a little bit creative, and we had to recruit some shows and, you know, try to keep at least every weekend filled with some kind of activity. We also did horse racing when Nebraska State Fair was in Lincoln. I never played a large role in that, but it certainly was a component of our grounds for, I think we ran 34 days of live racing when we were in Lincoln. And that was very interesting and unique as well.
That's great. And who was the fair manager then? Did you have a lot of interaction with the manager back then? And were they sort of a mentor? Or?
Absolutely. We've always been a small, you know, full-time year-round group. It's always been pretty small. When I first started, I got to work one fair only, which is unfortunate. But with John Scold, he was a Nebraska State Fair manager for a long time. So I got one year in with John Scold. I've got seven, I believe, executive directors that I worked for at Nebraska State Fair before I came one. But yeah, John was the first, and then Joseph McDermott was a steady hand multiple times.
Joseph was there a long time.
He actually hired me. He was the assistant manager and
smart man
who I interviewed with. Oh, you're kind. He is a smart man, though. He did a lot of good things for the Nebraska State Fair.
I liked him. He's very like unassuming. He's like not real, you know, gregarious out there, but he's very, things he said were important, you know, and you listen to him because he was had a lot to say that was really good, I thought.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's a numbers guy. For sure. He liked numbers, and he still does, I'm sure. But yeah. Good man. We tried to get him to smile every once in a while, and he would, especially when we'd go on the road. You know, Joseph was a little bit more fun and just a little bit more carefree when we'd get on the road and go visit.
And he went by Joseph, not Joe or anything else, right? It was Joseph.
Correct. When we moved to Grand Island and people would call him Joe or Joey, I'd just laugh. I'm like, oh my God.
Hey, Joe, Joseph. What's going on? It's Joseph.
Yeah.
That's and you said you had a small staff. Did you all just work around that one table that you described?
The manager well, the front back counter. It was quite nice. No, we did have some other desks and some other rooms, but yeah, I spent a good amount of time at that front counter for sure.
So the sales were interesting. Did you bring any new events to the facility? Did you were you able to prospect anything new or start something your own?
Yeah, you know, bluegrass was something that we tried out, and craft beers were just coming online in the late 90s. That's when I was doing those types of things. So it was fun to seek and find, and also to receive people who were looking for grounds or a facility to host their events in. We would help them plan. AmeriCruise Car Show was a big deal that was an annual event. And then we also helped a lot with Cornhusker State Games. They do a lot of sports activities annually, and we're continued our relationship with them. And we still welcome them to Grand Island. And wow. Love to reminisce about the good old days with a number of partners from Lincoln.
That's amazing. How did you increase the revenue a lot? The rentals?
Oh, I'm sure I did. I don't recall for sure. It's been some time ago, but you know, something that Joseph kept track of the financials. It was all in his hands. It was very much ask and you shall find out if you can, which is fine. It's a little bit different than how we do financials now. Here, everybody, each department is responsible for their portion of the budget. They know what that is. They know what their goals are, and they're working towards that. In Lincoln, it was different. That was what Joseph managed, and he was very good at it. So he could tell you, I bet, even today, if I brought in any extra revenues. But I can tell you that we did certainly increase the number of days that were booked and used on the property. That was something that I helped to, track and manage. And we submitted reports to the state and to those from whom we were seeking funding or grants or scholarships or anything like that. So the number of days used or the number of bookings, that certainly was good. And I'm sure the numbers.
And I'm no genius, but if you increase the number of days, and you didn't give them away for free, or you didn't have negative revenue, then you increase revenue, would be my guess. But I know?
You would think, but yep, I'm sure that's true.
So modest, Jamie. So at some point, I'm real curious, like just the story of how this happened. You guys decided to move halfway across the state to Grand Island, in sort of the middle of nowhere. But how did that come about? They just Joseph knock on your door one day and say, by the way, you want to move to Grand Island? We're taking the fairgrounds with us.
Yeah, that is the best thing that ever could have happened for Nebraska State Fair. Let me start by saying that. But when that decision was made, I was in tears. I was crying. I thought it was the end of the fair. It would never work. We're moving away from the people. But, you know, shortest version of that story that I have is that we were adjacent to the University of Nebraska campus, and they were very interested in our property. Legislative requests and opportunity to submit, where should the state fair go? And Grand Island put in an amazing proposal. They were very compelling. They had a number of community volunteers. They called themselves the Can Do volunteers and the community. And they brought the state fair from Lincoln over to Grand Island, and it was amazing from the onset. When we first moved in as staff into our Grand Island offices, people kept calling, what can we do? They wanted to be a part of the fair. And we were a little bit overwhelmed trying to figure out facilities and layouts and, you know, who our new partners were to help bring attractions and education to the fair. So we had all these volunteers that became pride and joy at the core of our hearts for our service and what we're able to do here in Grand Island. But yeah.
Did you have to get out a map and figure out where Grand Island was from Lincoln?
I had been a couple of times. They do have a horse track. So we had been, you know, we had a horse track and it's part of the circuit. So we had been to the horse track, but that was about all I knew about Grand Island. One restaurant, Dresbeck's, which is closed now, and the horse track was all I knew. And here we come.
And I'm teasing, Jamie, but that's, it is a small place when you go there. I've flown there once, but I didn't fly into Grand Island. I flew into Lincoln, I think. And it was hard to get to Lincoln, forget Grand Island. Then I had to drive another whatever it is to Grand Island. So it's in the middle of nowhere. There's no question about it. I know you guys are going to put on a brave face, but was there a little bit of nervousness saying, are the people going to come? You know, are they still going to travel the middle of the state to go?
Yeah. I got to defend my community just for a second. Grand Island has an amazing airport, and we fly to Denver or Dallas twice a day now. So you're going to have to come again, Ron.
It's been almost probably 10 years since I was there last night.
Fly right into the Grand Island Regional Airport because it's easy, it's clean, it's new, it's amazing.
I think the only option when I went was they like drop you off in a parachute or something. They fly over it.
Since the Safe Air came to town, a lot of things have progressed, and we're over 53,000 now, so we're considered a metro, a small community. But I love Grand Island, and now
nicest people I ever met in my life in Grand Island. I mean, people go out of their way to be nice to you. It's unbelievable. I mean, just everybody, and not like fake nice, overly nice, but just really genuinely nice people there. I mean, it was unbelievable. Restaurants you go to, everywhere you go, the people are just so nice.
That is very true. Absolutely. Some of our vendors who made the move with us, they said when we were in Lincoln, we'd go out to eat or to a restaurant or to the hotel, and people would be like, oh, you're here with a fair. And then in Grand Island, they're like, oh my gosh, you're here with the fair. So, you know, it's two very different receptions, and it's ongoing. So we're still very positive, and the community is very positive about Nebraska State Fair. We're fortunate to be here.
But was there a little bit of trepidation about, are the people going to come in the numbers that they came to Lincoln the first time? Did Joseph have to adjust the budget down a little bit, saying, ooh, maybe we won't get quite as many? Or
yes, absolutely. I know he was worried about that budget, as was I. We had a number of commercial vendors. That was what I was doing at the time of the move. I was working on layouts, commercial vendors, concessionaires, and then partners who would come and bring something to the fair. So, I actually had the most memorable panic attack that I've ever had on opening day. We're finally all set up and everything is as ready as it's going to be, right, for us to open those gates. And I'm running through the marketplace and I just stop and I'm like, oh shit, what if nobody comes? Like, we have done a lot of work and what if nobody comes? But they did come and they did enjoy it. And it's been not an easy road by any means, and not all rainbows and unicorns, but it's been very rewarding. And it feels right here.
And the grounds are beautiful. I mean, they're just beautiful. The buildings and all the places. How much of a hand did you guys have in getting it ready to move, to be your new home?
Yeah. Quite a bit. The city of Grand Island and the university and the state of Nebraska and the Nebraska State Fair put together about $42 million to build the first round of facilities. So there were three barns, one livestock arena, and an exposition building that were all built in 13 months wow. time. So it was a fast and furious build from the ground up. We're continuing that momentum. We're working through stormwater abatement program now, about $20 million worth of grant funding. And so we've got a few portions of the property all dug up and we're installing storm sewer pipes underground and serpentine filtration and detention cells and really continuing to invest back into this campus where we hold the annual Nebraska State Fair and the Exarban Stock Show.
That's right, the stock show. Yeah, no, the buildings are so. What was Fonder Park, which is where you are, like before the buildings went up? Was it just a flat park with nothing there, or what was it?
Well, the grandstand certainly was here, and the horse race track. And then they had the Heartland Event Center, a fairly new indoor concert facility, seats 5,000 to 6,000, depending on which configuration. And then they had soccer fields. So where the five new buildings were built, and then another two more later on, those were all soccer fields and parking lots for the soccer field. So we did displace some outdoor recreational activities. They've moved across town in order to make way for the state fair back in 2010.
So, you know, the move to Grand Island when you guys got there, did you have a big vendor turnover, or most of the people willing to come with you for the move?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. We're getting some age between us now. We've been here 15 years, so sometimes I got to pull back pretty far, but I feel like probably about 70% of our vendors maybe came. I would say that they're all important. Absolutely. David Webster, though, of Webster Enterprises, was one of our biggest vendors. He had the most number of booths in Lincoln. And we got him to agree to come and have about the same number of booths. Phyllis Westmoreland from the concession side, she had our biggest number of concessions. And those two leaders, once we got them on board, willing to give it a try, at least see what happens, then their peers also followed. So we had a good number of commercial vendors, a good number of concessionaires who came. And I'll just jump right to the results of that. What they said after the first year is, you know, we might not have seen as many eyeballs as what we had seen in Lincoln, but it was very good. And those who did come, they were shopping. They were interested, they were hungry, and they were buying. So that has maintained. We're trying to keep everything interesting and great so that people still continue to have those experiences by participating or taking in the Nebraska State Fair.
It's kind of interesting because being a, you know, state fair management team at that time, usually you're not in the position of having to convince the vendors to come to your fair like that. That's interesting because, you know, usually you have a big state fair and people want to come and people are fighting over locations and things like that. And then you were kind of in the position where you had to sell yourself, which is unusual for a state fair to come to. So it was for your career, it was probably a really interesting experience that a lot of people don't get to do because they never have to be in that position. They're usually in a successful position and people want them more than, you know, you have to do convincing them to come.
I can see where that perception would come from. But the reality is Nebraska State Fair has always kind of had to sell ourselves, really? Let people know what's so cool about it. It's a long, especially on the vendor side and like our ag partners, it's a long commitment for people to set up and have a display for 11 days. The staffing it is required. So if they're not making money right away, sometimes it's hard for them to see the residual. And the honest residual is that people might see you at the state fair, whether they buy at the state fair or not, they have seen you and you become another touch point with them. So when they are ready to buy some of that big ag equipment, sometimes that happens 6 or 9 months down the road. Sometimes it happens a couple years down the road. But by people being at the Nebraska State Fair, they are being seen another time. So it's another forward movement for them.
And what was your role when you moved out to Grand Island? Were you still in the same position? Were you still concessions?
Yeah, working with those vendors and the concessionaires. And then I got to do something pretty cool to add to the mix, lay out the whole entire fairground. So wow. I got to learn about AutoCAD to create our booth maps inside and then our booth and entertainer layouts outside. So we created where our aisles were going to be and our walkways and how big were these booths and how much are we going to charge for them. So that was a big project. And I would say that continues to evolve, not drastically, but really set the foundation for what we're working with today.
That's great. So that you've been, how many years have you been in Grand Island? I know it's more.
Yeah, 2010. This will be the 16th fair, 15 years in Grand Island.
That's crazy. It feels like it was yesterday.
Flies by so quickly. I still have a map up and always will, I think, as long as I'm here, of the Lincoln Fairgrounds. And it's good memories, but you have to really think now. It's not as natural or just to say, remember when.
And what percentage of the staff made it on the over to Grand Island? I know you're the only one left, I read. I am the only one left.
I felt like an orphan for a little while, but not anymore. We've got this great team. But there were six of us who made the move from Lincoln to Grand Island. Six made the move. I'm the last person standing, and we're now a full-time team of 17 strong. So,
wow. Only one left. There were three managers or executive directors before you in Grand Island, right? Before you took over.
Yeah. Joseph, certainly came over from Lincoln. Yeah. And then,
he was there quite a while.
Yeah. Joseph was the director for quite a while. He followed, I'll go through my spell. In Lincoln, it was John Scold, then Joseph, then Pat Lloyd, then Joseph, then Rick Bjorklund, then Joseph, then Barney Cosner, then Joseph, then.
Oh, he came in last. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, Barney was fun. They all were fun. You know, I learned something from all of them. Something I might want to do. Something I might not want to do. But certainly learned from each and every person that had this seat before me.
That's great.
In Grand Island, then we had Joseph for a good long spell, and then Lori Cox was here for a few years, and then Bill Ogg, and then Jamie Parr. And an honor to be associated with those amazing people in the fair industry.
And you were assistant manager for a while, right? Before you became.
Yeah, I did that role. Yeah, when Bill was here. Yes, he called me a deputy, and that was interesting. Really helped me to expand my understanding of other departments. There certainly were times where I had to narrow my focus and really just pay attention to what was going on in my department. But under Bill's guidance and leadership, I was able to learn quite a bit more about entertainment and agriculture, marketing, sponsorships. I'd always been close with sponsorships and marketing, but those other adventures are lessons I continue to learn now. I've got great directors who are overseeing those departments, but I've learned a lot the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'm always interested because people that have become the executive director or the manager or whatever the title is, you know, usually have a real strong background in something. And then I'm always curious about the things that they maybe didn't have as much experience about, you know, how they learned about it or how they, you know, faced that learning curve to get up to speed. So maybe yours was maybe entertainment or things like that. That was, you were late to the.
You're exactly didn't have as much right.
Experience. Yeah.
My biggest lessons learned the last couple of years come around concerts, especially the national concerts, and then livestock in agriculture. So those two things have occupied a good amount of my time. I rely on my director so much for both of those aspects, and all of the directors are amazing. But I've learned the most in those two categories the last couple of years.
Yeah, conscience is a tricky business. It's not an easy business to do.
Yeah.
I know Lori was big on the concerts and doing things like that. She had a lot of concerts and places. And what are you doing nowadays? Like, what are your how are you able to make money or you know, not lose too much money by doing shows? What kind of shows work for you and what are you looking at?
Well, the latter is definitely true. Trying not to lose too much money. Would love to make a little. And, some shows were able to cover the cost of the talent. That's kind of our overall goal for concerts is to cover the cost of the talent and then enjoy some profits, hopefully. And one place we have to share some profits of our food and beverage. But so our structure last year, we were hoping to not be so heavy country, and we still ended up very heavy country. So we're intentionally making other choices this year. So instead of being so focused on country, we are bringing comedian. Christian always does really well in our area. Latino or the Latin Hispanic groups do well here. So we'll have that. And then some classic rock. And did I say comedy? I'm getting lost.
Yeah, you mentioned comedy at the beginning. That seems to be doing well with a lot of markets. And hopefully the prices don't get driven up right away because people are moving there.
We were really disappointed. So it was easy for us to not focus on country this year because the cost of country artists seemed to be soaring without a whole lot of, I guess, justification for why. So we're really we're not inclined to overpay for something that
it's not gonna
may or may not sell.
Return.
So we're
my daughters went to a show. Or a couple of them did, and I think it was Zach Brown or something. Somebody opened for him, a country artist, a lady, and they loved him. And she's like, "You should book him at one of your events, or her at one of your events." And you know, I inquired to one of the talent agents, and they said she gets $200,000. I said,
"Easy."
I mean, it's so insane. And I just saw, where did I see the other day? It didn't look too good. Oh, it was Bill Ray Cyrus. But I remember, you know, because it was early in my career that Billy Ray Cyrus booked a bunch of fairs before he hit it big. And then Achy Breaky Heart came out and he hit it big. And I always remember that he kept all those dates. He honored all those dates that he had made for like, who knows, a few thousand bucks or 5,000 bucks or whatever the heck they were paying him at the time. And he played every single one of them. I heard about one exception. He had some kind of award ceremony, but he made it up next year at the place. But you know, you don't hear too much about that anymore. It's really a tough game. I mean, there's no safe places. And country used to be the safe place, but it's just not.
No. I agree. Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. Kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth specifically. So I'm glad that we have an amazing entertainment director who still loves and thrives in that world, and I trust her. And we talk a lot about what the series is going to look like, but only one country show this year, and we're offering it as a free show. So excited to see if those people who have asked us for so long for rock comedy or Christian, all the different things. We're really bringing a variety for this year's State Fair, and I'm excited to see how we're received for that.
And are they all hard tickets, the concerts that you have?
Yeah, the one country will be free with just paid gate admission, but all the others are hard tickets that include gate admission. Yes, sir.
Gate admission and hard tail. Okay. And what are the ticket prices range from for a grandstand show?
Oh yeah. Well, the one free show, but other than that, anywhere from $25 to $85. We try to stay away from the triple digits here in Grand Island. Don't see a lot of $100 ticket sales that have a successful show or a lot of people there. So.
But did the concert series do well last year? Was it still a
Yeah, it did well. We had some great shows. We had Turnpike Troubadours. Just over 5,000 people came to that show. That was our biggest last year. But yeah, we had a good series. But again, it was pretty heavy with the country vibe, and we're looking to change that up significantly, or we are changing that up significantly this year.
You know, somebody I was interviewing not too long ago. I'm not sure. I think it was Matt Walsmith from the South Florida Fair, who's a finance guy, he's a money guy, became manager. And but you know, he has a money, you know, some of those guys are all they have is a static model. Like, you spend a dollar in marketing, that's a dollar you lost, you know. But he has more of a dynamic analysis. But he was talking about, you know, having a concert of some kind, that there's something, even if the people don't go, there's something psychologically that the fair is a little more exciting this year because that act is there. And how you measure that, or how, you know, what that means for people is tough to gauge, but there is an effect where people, there's buzz and people are talking about it. They may or may not go, but you know, there's something exciting about the fair because it's new or it's exciting or it's whatever it might be. And that kind of stuck with me.
That it's so accurate. Yeah, it certainly happens here also. You know, if all of our shows were sellouts, I think it's like maybe 10% of our total attendance that would have attended a national concert. And at the same time, wherever, if we're out, selling the fair or just out in the community and somebody asks, the number one question asked is who's playing at the fair this year. And I'm just like, there is so much more about what we do than these national shows, but they are, even if it's not about the actual tickets or the revenues coming off of the show, it's a perception of what the fair will be that year. So it is important. It is valuable. We'll keep doing them, but it's sometimes frustrating.
But there's such a focus on it. So the people, the people like what they like. It's tough.
Yeah. It's a big thing that's different at the fair that everybody might be able to know who it is or understand what that means. So I kind of get it, but we sure do try to put out a whole lot of other information about what we do on an annual basis, because it's pretty amazing, inclusive of the concert series. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about the grounds entertainment or free access? How has that changed over the last few years? And what do you see?
So fun. It's, so many people spend so much time doing those things. And we were really honored to see in our surveys that our average length of stay per person was 5.5 hours. That's significant compared to some other numbers that we have heard around. The grounds attractions, people spend time there, right? Each show's from 20 to 40 minutes long. And, we have 4 or 5 or 6 of those shows on grounds, plus the strolling acts that people expect to see kind of wandering around. So we do put some emphasis on those when we're doing advertising as well, that free entertainment that you get for anybody who, comes through the gate with a ticket, free entertainment of grounds attractions, strolling acts, beer garden bands or free stages. We have a lot of programming partners here also, where our partnership consists of us offering a location and utilities, and then a group coming in to bring something that is educational and ag focused and interactive for youth and families. So we have a lot of partnerships in that respect also. There's so much to a state fair. And don't forget, the heart and soul is those livestock shows and competitive exhibits. But yeah, the number one asked question is who's playing at the fair this year?
Who's playing at the fair?
It's boggling.
Are your shows pretty well attended? The livestock shows, do they?
We have a good number of exhibitors. Some shows fluctuate. This last year, we had a significant number of dairy goats, really significant, far more than we've had in the past. And, I think those smaller animals are something that more people can do. You don't necessarily have to have acres and acres to have a goat or a lamb. And I see those smaller animal numbers really coming up quickly. Nebraska is also a big beef state. So cattle is a big deal. We have show cattle. And then this year, we're also recruiting some commercial cattle to have a exhibit on ground. So people can kind of see, they're very different. Show cow from a beef cow. And I look forward to kind of show that comparison to the public.
So you do make a point of explaining. I had Marlene on before she left, and I thought she was going to yell at me, but she didn't. She actually agreed with me. Because as a non-livestock, I grew up in New Jersey. I don't know anything about animals. Maybe my dog, that's about it. But when I go to those shows, and I've been to dozens of them, I have no idea what's going on. I mean, absolutely none. They're judging, and I don't know if they're looking for a bushy tail or whatever they're looking for. And I want to learn, but they don't explain it to you. So I just like, I don't know what I'm looking at. I feel like a Martian that just came to a basketball game. I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because I do want to learn, but they don't really, and I'm sure there's places that do, but the ones I've been to, I've been to a lot, there's not really a lot of information if you don't know what you're looking for.
I can't wait to pick you up from the airport, Ron, when you come fly into Grand Island, and then I'm taking you right to our show ring, because we do ask and, strongly recommend our judges to provide that detail. What are you looking for? What are you talking about? Why did that one win? Why did that one lose? So They presented.
Thank God, Jamie. I'm coming there. I can't wait.
I can't wait.
Finally, I'll understand what's going on.
We'll help you out.
I think that's great because I did want to learn. I wanted to understand what was going on. And I sat there for 20 minutes and I'm just like, I have no idea what's going on. I really don't. I mean, the one that wins, I didn't think it was going to win. What do I know? You know?
Yeah.
Then I was watching, it was just after that. I mean, just after that, a few months after the dog show thing that comes on after, what is it? The Thanksgiving Day parade?
Oh,
or is it Christmas at that time? It's after one of the parades. But, you know, they were explaining. And I said, that's what they need to do. It's like it was like Marla called it color commentary or something like that. So I guess so. But that'd be fun. I even think, you know, from a marketing hat on, that it'd be fun to, you know, to really make kind of stars out of some of them, you know, like give them names or little personas or things like that. So people might go and look at that thing and see, Sparky the cow or whatever, and his background and why he's a superstar or something like that, you know, might give a little interest to people that otherwise might not be interested in those things.
We are working on that. I love that you mentioned that color commentary. We have a little bit of it on our stream shows. We do stream most of our livestock shows, and you can watch them even without flying into Grand Island Airport. But we do try to provide some of that color commentary. It does make it more interesting, and it does let people, you know, better understand what is happening in that ring. So that is important. We still have some opportunity to grow that that piece, but it is something we have begun.
Yeah, you know, I think just observing fairs for years, I do feel like a lot of times there's a disconnect between the ag, which, you know, all the fair people say they want to promote ag and learn and stuff like that. But then when you actually go, if you wander in a barn, you know, not your fair, but some places, I'm talking about the industry in general, you wander in a barn and you feel like you're going to be kicked out at any second. Like they don't want you there, you know, like, and it's a shame because that's how the people learn, by going to those places and learning about, you know, it'd be nice if the kid who had a project or whatever they call raising the animal, you know, talked about it. If there was some sort of presentation about it, or they talked about it, I think people would learn a lot more. I'm sure some fairs do a great job with it, but I think your run-of-the-mill fair, your average county fair, there's not a lot of that goes on, which is a shame because it's a great opportunity to teach about those things and get the word out.
It is, and that is where you learn, right, is by jumping in there, not being afraid, go in there and walk around, ask a few questions. You can tell who's going to be open to a conversation and who's focused on getting that animal ready for the ring. We did add in some Moo U barn tours. It's from, livestock educated professionals who have a booth in our commercial building, but also do free tours for our guests. So guests can sign up and do a tour through the barns to find out what the heck, those exhibitors are doing, how they get the livestock ready for the show ring, and some general information about them. Very educational. It's been a great addition to our fair overall. And we're glad to have that, but as well as just people walking through on their own. And for the most part, those exhibitors will stop and visit and, you know, share their knowledge. They realize that they are doing something people don't necessarily understand. And for the most part, they'll share, but there are some who would rather focus on what they got going on, and their focus is in the show ring.
Yeah, which is great. It is. And it's good to see those things. It's just, you know, I was talking to one person at a fair, a county fair here in Virginia. This has been a while, but, you know, they were like, we don't want the people to come over here. I was like, why do you have the show during the fair then? You're inviting thousands of people here, and then you're saying, don't come into our barn. It seems a little crazy, because that's kind of the whole point of having the fair.
Yeah, sometimes it's a safety thing. I know I visited a recent national show, and the equine barn especially had some signage out front that basically said, don't bother us, we're working. Don't get in the way. It's a safety issue. And don't talk to us because we're busy. And I was like, oh, that's not very welcoming. But, their focus is all about the exhibitor and the exhibitor's experience. And that is important also.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. So we covered entertainment, all those livestock shows. excuse me, sorry. How is it? You live, the fair is in a small area. So how wide does your marketing have to be? You've got so many different media markets around there. It's my friend at the Delaware State Fair, Danny Aguilar, we always noodle that around a little because he's in the middle of nowhere, but he's near Philadelphia and he's near, Baltimore. Yeah. And it's a lot of money because you're several different major media markets you might have to touch.
Absolutely. So we are not quite geographically in the center of the state. We're still a little bit on the eastern side, but our population centers, our urban environments, Lincoln and Omaha, are an hour and a half and 2 hours away from us. We moved away from the population center when we came to Grand Island. Some benefits of that are ease of movement for livestock trailers and traffic, and brings us a little bit closer to the western half of the state of Nebraska. So people could come more often or multiple times, hopefully more than once. Our market though, so that's kind of how we break up our markets. The Tri-Cities, three smaller communities, Grand Island, Hastings, and Kearney, is the Tri-Cities mm-hmm. for us in the middle of the state. And then we have Omaha Market, Lincoln Market, and Western Market, and then Nebraska at large. So all of those different areas or radiuses. We have done a few times trying to invest heavily into that Omaha market. That's where the people are. So we want them to know that they're invited, and we've done some cheeky things, I would say, or pushed the limits a little bit on some billboard advertisement there. We use the poop emoji, and that really got some extra attention, but it didn't turn our dial that much. So we still market there. But our biggest emphasis is, I would say, greater Nebraska and, all of Nebraska that's not necessarily named there, trying to get invitation and excitement brewing across the state, because we are truly the Nebraska State Fair, and we want everybody to know that they're invited.
What percentage of your people still come from Omaha?
It has risen, actually, oddly, more than what it was when we were in Lincoln. There was this invisible, when I was at Nalsarama in California, they called it the curtain, the lettuce curtain between some of their areas. And people just don't cross. And in between, when we were in Lincoln, between Omaha, there was this invisible line. We couldn't turn the dial on the Omaha market. But I think right now we're close to 6% of our attendees come from Lincoln. And maybe 5% from Omaha.
And you measure that through surveys or through
data? Surveys, and then the zip codes for tickets.
Interesting. Okay, so your marketing then covers the whole state. Mostly, what do you mostly do? Billboards for far away, or a lot of digital, I guess, of all various types.
Last year, we did a lot of billboards, and it was a good year. Attendance was up by 1%, so a slight increase. It was the right direction, but a lot of billboards last year. We're backing off on those a little bit this year. Like country music, the billboard prices have gone up around here. So we are looking at more digital, and certainly the social channels. We do very little TV, but we do have a couple of news stations that broadcast live, at least a morning show or an afternoon show, or the weather's reported. So we have a little bit of TV access through our partners in the news departments, but a lot of digital trying to get creative. I don't know. They're talking about, and this is Courtney's thing, right? Got a marketing director who knows all the specifics, but talking a little bit about advertising on Google versus other socials. So it's all very interesting. Mostly digital is the shortest.
You're doing search and AdWords and things like that on Google. Yeah. People that search.
Yeah.
Things to do this weekend.
I guess. Yeah. There's more to learn in my always.
On the marketing side.
Yeah.
So how is the Nebraska State Fair? Like, what sort of entity are you? Are you a
We're a nonprofit. We're a 501c5. And then another category that we are is a quasi-state agency. It's significant. The funding that we get is from our lottery dollars, flows through the state department. So the lottery proceeds, lottery makes up about a third of our annual budget. So that is significant for us. But other than that, no funding comes from the state at this time. Before the lottery funds became a reality for Nebraska State Fair, we received money for premiums. So just for the livestock and competitive exhibits shows.
501c5.
So it's a nonprofit, but not tax deductible.
Right. Not a C3.
Correct.
That's an interesting. And then you have a foundation too, right?
Yeah. So there's our C3 right there. 1868 Foundation. They do a great job. They help us with grants and, private fundraising, some corporate fundraising also. But that is our 501c3.
And who's in charge of that for you?
Lindsay Kepke.
Lindsay still is.
Yep.
Did she come from?
She worked for the fair when the fair was in Lincoln, but she did not physically move. So actually is helpful for her to still be in Lincoln and have touch points with the Lincoln business and private. Yep.
Yeah. Before we were talking about the move, I didn't want to ask it in case she wasn't there anymore, but I was wondering if Lindsay was still around. She's been doing that a long time.
She is. Yes.
She's very enthusiastic about it.
That she is. Yeah. She's a good gal. She does a good job.
Does a great job. So the grounds are not yours though, right? They're you're a tenant.
Yeah, the property is owned by Fauner Park. We are a tenant on campus, so we bring out all our toys, produce a fair, produce a stock show, and then put all of our toys away. We have 60 days to do that. We're here year round, so we can go look at things, we can measure things, we can envision and work through our logistic plans, but we have 60 days to do our full harvest of our event season. So yes, we are tenants on Fauner Park campus. Other stakeholders on campus right now is Venue Works is new to the campus. They run the Heartland Event Center the rest of the year. State Fair has occupancy of that concert arena called Heartland Event Center, just 30 days, maybe it's 45 days. By contract, it's less than 60. And then we have a new casino about to open in March, Grand Island Casino Resort, operated by Elite Casinos, is going to be opening, I think, in March. They said the end of first quarter, so should be getting an announcement soon.
How's that going to affect the fair? Is it going to affect parking or anything along those lines?
Parking is our biggest concern on campus right now. We are beyond occupational or occupancy limits. We're beyond that now. So working with the city to establish some resolution to that. State Fair did just invest in some property to the south of campus, which I think will be invaluable in a short amount of time. So trying to keep everybody moving in the right direction. And the campus is full. We're not on top of each other, but we certainly have neighbors quite close. And we work together regularly. So stakeholders united.
Have you talked to Danny Aguilar over the Delaware State Fair? Because they have a casino on grounds too. And well, I guess so does Erie, but...
No, not yet. Thank you.
It might be interesting to talk because they got to share. I mean, literally, they put up fences in the parking lot where the casino is because they have to share space, during the state.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would not be our style. I hope we don't come to the need for that.
It's not bad. We just have to delineate the grounds because
So people know. I get it. Yeah. We do put up some temporary fencing to keep the carnival in secure, I guess, let's say. There's all kinds of things. So lots of conversations. But
it's a shame you don't share in the revenue. That'd be nice.
Well, the casino, since they've been on grounds, even before they opened their temporary facility, have been one of our largest sponsors. So it's not a profit sharing, but they certainly do support, and we have good relationship.
Could at least give you like 10 cents from every slot machine.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of hands out for all those 10 cents. All
right, buddy. So there's no old Jamie renting the grounds anymore. There's no off-season rentals for you guys?
Correct. Largely correct. Yeah, Fauner Park is responsible for that. One other area that we do work quite hard in is Gilka. Our livestock shows in the off-season, right? So those new facilities that came because of the state fair were given to Fauner Park. And they're challenged to fill them, and they do not have livestock show experience or knowledge or equipment or labor. So we do partner with them and the local Visitors Bureau, Convention and Visitors Bureau, to produce livestock shows, junior national shows throughout the rest of the year, the other 10 months. So we provide the lion's share of labor and equipment and machinery to produce Gilka shows also. So there's a lot going on. We're not responsible to fill the buildings per se, but we do most of the work for them.
Wow. Yeah, but it's definitely a little different mix without having to do the rentals and all those things all year long. That's you could just focus on the fair, I guess, to a certain extent.
That was the coolest thing about moving here is being able to focus on the state fair. So glad, though, we've taken on these other adventures also that make sense. Exarban Stock Show and the Gilka Livestock Shows as well.
So now all the people that ask you what you do the other 50 weeks of the year are closer to the truth. Not really, but yeah.
As a running joke in our office, I'll stop by a staff member's office, maybe catch a hint of overwhelmedness. And we talk about it a little bit. And then before I leave, I'm like, now you got something to let people know when they ask what we do all year round. You can let them know. So we're busy all the time. Yeah. Our downtime is few and far between as far as number of days.
Absolutely. So what's next? Do you have any big projects coming up for the fairgrounds? I mean, besides your opening a casino.
Yeah. Well, the casino is opening on campus. So great partners. This ARPA funding, truly all the construction and overseeing $20 million worth of federal funds is a significant undertaking. So we are working through that. Grand Island, though, Nebraska has opportunities for sales tax to be used in different ways. So we are pursuing some potential partnerships with what they call good life districts. We are looking to the future. We'll have a major fundraising campaign unrolled in the next year or 18 months where we really set the organization up for great success. And checking off some wish lists is the goal across the next 6 or 7 years. So there's a ton happening. And as soon as we work through this federal grant money, the campus will be better equipped to not flood if it rains half an inch. So we'll have great access to the facilities, and just getting across campus won't be driving through major puddles, and great improvements as far as underground stormwater movement. So we don't have to cross these major ditches to get off our streets into the grass or the pavement areas. There's so much going on, Ron. I can't wait to show you.
It's crazy. There's a lot going on. It's such a beautiful campus. I mean, I just remember how pretty it was, so many different places and the participation, like you said, I was working a little bit with Sean back then when he was the marketing director, and there were so many, people there to interview you and they do different things. It was crazy, constant almost. Like, it was like you were the whole news for the place, it was like just covering the fair was enough for the whole news for the day.
Yeah, we'll continue to do that, Ron. We're not gonna sit idle. Firmly believe, and multiple of my previous directors taught me that you're always moving one direction. So if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards, and that's not a good momentum to have.
Now with the nudes, though, you wonder how many people are really watching, you know, because like I can't tell you the last time I watched the news of any kind, you know, it's been a long time. So like, you know, I just really wonder, like, who is watching this, you know, who's tuned into the news station at such and such a clock, and, you know, what age are they and what's going on? But, you know, that's a discussion for a different day with stuff, but it's changed so much. You know, that used to be like the holy grail. If you could get the news to come out live and do that stuff all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. And our local news really did do a major shift, and wasn't well received at first, but I think people are getting used to it. They got rid of, you know, the news anchors who had been there forever and were known, the channel was known for those two news anchors, and they've switched to all independent stories, independent reporters. And it's hard to accept right away, like, you know, a lot of changes. But I don't think they've lost many viewers. Those who have moved away, they have kind of come back. But I would say, as far as the actual news on TV, certainly it's probably an older age group. But yep, digitally, those same stories are more TikTok style.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They get done. Well, Jamie, believe it or not, we've been gabbing for an hour here about stuff.
Goes fast. Thank you so much.
You. Always fascinating. You've done a great job there. And we'll be watching you to see what you got coming up in the future. I'm sure there'll be great things. And hopefully we'll get out there this year with Labor Day. So
would love it. Would love it, Ron. Thank you so much for the invitation. It was great to visit with you today.
Thank you so much for coming on. And I'll see you.
This podcast is brought to you by Innovative Ticketing. Is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Our staff of professionals can guide you through your setup, assist with customer service, even on the weekends when you most need it, and help increase your sales through promotions that work. Innovative Ticketing is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Sign up today at innovativeticketing.com.